Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
They only listen to me half the time anyway, right?
You think it's that high? Wow, that's generous.
Yes! Go, Cammy!
This is an intervention.
Oh.
Not voting.
Oh, okay.
That is the coolest coffee trick I've ever seen.
I'm going to put a little bit more blackberry.
And then podcast because of that.
I owe you some audio equipment.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
The man accused of robbing the Canby Music Store last August and assaulting the store's manager has been convicted and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Canby Music manager Taylor Anderson was there the afternoon of August 3rd when Douglas Wayne Dunn entered the store claiming to be interested in buying a guitar. Taylor says the man seemed perfectly normal and was dressed presentably, wearing what appeared to be a FedEx shirt. He could also play at least well enough to convince Taylor that his interest in buying a guitar was sincere. That all changed when Taylor went to the store counter to make a phone call. As soon as his back was turned, Dunn grabbed a second electric guitar and bolted for the door. He didn't get very far.
He happened to kick the doorstop on his way out and faceplant on the ground. He just, you know, I heard the guitar scrape across the ground out there.
Yeah.
And
on the concrete.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind
not
of
a good sound.
That's not a good sound.
Yeah.
And that's really what caught my attention was hearing the door buzzer and then him, you know, splat on the ground. The guitars were mangled.
You have to remember, Canby is one of the safest cities in Oregon. Taylor was never trained in how to handle a violent robbery. This kind of stuff doesn't happen every day. Remembering the incident, Taylor says he didn't think, he just reacted. He made it to Dunn just as he was getting to his feet, still clutching the two now-ruined guitars. The two grappled with each other outside Canby Music Store and eventually wound up in front of neighboring Rounders. Taylor says he was just trying to corral Dunn and prevent him from getting away. He eventually wrapped an arm around the other man in an attempt to restrain him. Dunn began swinging one of the guitars like a club, trying to hit Taylor in the face.
He's holding the guitars in his hands and he's just trying to jab me in the face with one of them, and he ends up getting me in the cheek.
Strings can be kind of sharp, those bits, yeah?
Yeah, I think I was hit with the blunt end of the headstock.
Okay.
It was a guitar with six in a row, basically, machine heads in a row, so the other side got me. So it wasn't that bad, as far as that goes.
Right.
But
not something you enjoyed.
No, not at all.
Store owner Brian Haynes, who wasn't there at the time, says the guitar Dunn was using as a weapon weighed 8 pounds, about four times as much as your average baseball bat. Fortunately, Taylor escaped the scuffle without serious injury. Dunn managed to scramble away, running west down First Avenue, then turning the corner and heading north. Taylor followed but kept his distance. He says he remembers yelling and trying to alert passersby or people in the other storefronts to call the police. Quote, I tried to be as noisy as I could, he recalled. I thought if I could make as much noise as I can, the police will show up eventually. I just had to keep him in my sights at that point. He pursued Dunn through the parking lot that serves Pappy's Greasy Spoon and other local businesses, then across 2nd Avenue to Key Bank. There, Dunn was cornered, as other passersby had noticed the commotion and come to help Taylor. Dunn continued to swing the guitars at anyone who got close and also purported to have a deadly weapon. When Canby police arrived, Dunn claimed that he'd put a $500 down payment on one of the guitars and that Taylor had actually attacked him with the other. But much like Dunn with the guitars, they didn't buy it. He was taken into custody and lodged at the Clackamas County Jail. The court process moved fairly quickly, especially considering there was no plea deal, but the store owner, Brian, says it didn't feel all that fast. He was at every hearing and eventually expressed frustration at the delays, many of which were related to issues that kept coming up with Dunn's court-appointed attorneys. He went through at least four of them. Why was he so involved, besides the obvious? Two reasons. First, he felt he owed it to Taylor, his employee, to advocate for him whenever possible. Canby Music had interior security cameras which showed the initial theft, but most of the allegations, including the assault, could be backed up only by Taylor's testimony. Because of this, Taylor knew he would be the subject of a ruthless cross-examination by Dunn's attorney at trial, and that's exactly what happened. But the other reason was the brazenness of the crime itself, and how much worse it could have been.
The majority of what happens here is music lessons, like guitar lessons and whatnot, and most of the people that take guitar lessons are school-age kids.
Yeah.
We also do a lot of band instrument rentals. And who rents band instruments? Middle and high schoolers. And we work with the schools and do their repairs and all that stuff. So a lot of our customers are like a mom with a couple kids that come in here.
Sure.
And this guy comes in the middle of the day and does this.
Yeah.
Not okay.
Yeah.
Dunn's bench trial was held March 11th before Clackamas County Judge Heather Carabeca. He was convicted on all charges, 2 counts of robbery, assault, unlawful use of a weapon, first-degree theft, and menacing. He was sentenced the following week, March 18th, to 10 years in prison. The judge also ruled him ineligible for credit for time served or early release. The mandatory minimum sentence for first-degree robbery is 90 months, or 7.5 years. Brian says he thinks Dunn was given a lengthier sentence because of his criminal record and because of the attitude and distinct lack of remorse he showed throughout the trial.
But robbery one is a Measure 11 offense, which means 7.5 years.
Minimum.
Yep.
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And so we knew that. And but he just kept talking sentencing day and just kept burying himself some more and showed the judge.
No remorse.
Showed the judge that, that no remorse.
Yeah.
Was completely delusional with what happened.
Right.
I mean, he was talking to the end.
Looking back, and now knowing much more about the kind of person Dunn is, Taylor realizes he got off lucky. Both Taylor and Brian are just glad that it's over, and they can finally move on. I mean, once the appeals run their course, that is.
Well, don't mess with Canby Music Store or Taylor Anderson is my takeaway.
A 19-year-old Estacada man has been arrested following an incident in which he allegedly attacked an elderly woman in a grocery store parking lot and attempted to flee the scene in her pickup truck. The assailant, Rick Douglas Simmons, allegedly caused a disturbance outside the Harvest Market in Estacada at approximately 7:15 p.m. Sunday. According to police, he approached one woman, shoved her, and stated that he was suicidal and she should call the police. Police say he then walked across the parking lot toward a 71-year-old woman and punched her in the face. She fell to the ground and was briefly unconscious. Simmons then entered her vehicle in what appeared to be an attempt to steal it. Bystanders quickly came to the injured woman's aid and stopped Simmons from leaving. Police say they moved the victim out of harm's way and tried to remove the keys from the vehicle. During the struggle, Simmons drove the truck forward, running into a bottle return machine and damaging the vehicle in the process. Several bystanders were then able to remove Simmons from the truck and hold him down on the ground until deputies arrived. He was arrested without further incident. Estacada Fire and American Medical Response personnel arrived at the location to render first aid to the injured woman. Police say she suffered bumps and bruises, but was able to leave the scene with family members. Simmons was bleeding from cuts on his arms that police say happened before the altercation in the parking lot. He later told deputies that he had taken hallucinogenic mushrooms that afternoon. Simmons was transported to and booked at the Clackamas County Jail on charges of third-degree assault, unlawful use of a motor vehicle, second-degree criminal mischief, and reckless endangering. Bail was set at $75,000. Dashcam video of the aftermath of the incident can be seen on our website at canbynowpod.com.
This is Sarah Spoon from Canby's own residential real estate company, Victory Point Property Group, with your Canby Real Estate Update for the week of March 17th, 2019. Last week, 16 homes were listed in zip code 97013, 0 homes went sale pending, and 0 homes sold. Overall days on the market for all listings in 97013 are holding at 120, with an average dollar per square foot of $216. If you'd like to know more about how much your home could sell for, or if you're interested in purchasing a home, we are your local experts. You can find us at www.victorypointhomes.com or 503-263-4700.
True story. When we first started the Can Be Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. March, a poem by Joseph Ashby Sterry. O wind of March, O biting breeze, it nips the nose and nips the trees. It whirls with fury down the street. It makes us flee and quick retreat, and gives us cold and makes us sneeze. It makes us cough and choke and wheeze with painful back and aching knees. With dire discomfort, 'tis replete, O wind of March. Our hands were glad enough to squeeze in cuffs and muffs and muffetees. 'Tis charged with blinding, cutting sleet, spoils our temper, chills our feet, and brings the doctor lots of fees, O wind of March. My guest today is Chris Helblink. He's the winemaker at Postlewaite's Vineyards, which is also the home of Postlewaite's Country Weddings, and Whiskey Hill Winery. Chris, how are you?
Amazing. How are you?
Yeah. Oh, amazing. I think you're my first guest who's been feeling amazing, so that's good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great. I'm doing well. So we are here in the tasting room, which has a very interesting floor. We were hearing the history of that. This may have been the original some kind of shop or even like a carriage house, he said, because this farm is 1 million years old.
Not exactly sure what it is. It's one of the two oldest buildings on the property. The large barn is the other old building, and it's the frame in there is the notch where they cut out the notch in the beam and they put the notch in the other one.
Right.
So older than both of us combined, probably.
Right. And when you guys are here making wine late at night, you hear the ghosts of like horses and like wagon wheels. And
all the time.
It's a little scary sometimes, right?
Yeah, wedding ghosts, everything.
Wedding ghosts. Well, you guys have a really interesting, I think, kind of unique story for how the winery came to be. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
It was a long journey to wine.
Yeah, you did not start with wine. Wine was like the very last thing that you thought you would be doing.
It was kind of an annoyance at points. So basically, my wife's parents farmed all over the valley for a long time. And
kinds of different stuff, corn and barley and
pretty much anything that you could grow and sell to a cannery or
besides
sell.
Grapes.
Said, yes, besides. So. They were doing all of that, and about 2001.
What are their names?
Gary and Carolyn Postlewaite.
Okay.
And then my wife is Jackie Postlewaite. And so about 2001, they had my wife's sister's wedding out here. It was fantastic. Everyone loved it, and everybody who were friends and family wanted to keep doing them out here. So a couple more years, they did some friends and family weddings, and it was really popular. About the time my wife was going from high school to college, my wife started helping them out with them as a business, and that was her summer job. And so it got really busy. Then the state and the county came out about 2008-ish, 2007, somewhere in there. And they're like, hey, you need to get these permits in order to do these events. And so made them go through a permitting process. And in order to do commercial events on an EFU property, you had to have one of these specific businesses there. So it could be a golf course, a winery, or a third one, I can't remember what it is.
Right.
And so they picked winery was their way into that.
Right. Yeah, you couldn't just do events. You had to have some kind of farming type of basis or things.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
It's but that's
weird,
funny.
Weird laws sometimes. Yeah. You just kind of roll with it. And so they went through a 2-year permitting process.
Yeah. Did they have any interest in, why did they pick the winery of the golf course or the winery or the mystery option? Why did they choose?
You know, they... they didn't really have an interest in wine at the time.
It was just kind of more farming adjacent. That was their background.
So. My mother-in-law didn't really drink alcohol. My father-in-law loved Busch Light and Coors Light. Okay. He wasn't a big wine guy at the time. I mean, they both like wine very much now.
Right.
But it was more a necessity in order to do the weddings.
Well, I think of those kind of that class of beers, Busch Light is the most wine tasting of beer, for
there's,
sure.
There's
for
a
sure.
very famous saying that it takes a lot of really bad beer to make really good wine.
Yeah. And that's what was your father-in-law's name?
Gary.
Gary Postulate. Yeah. I believe that's attributed to him.
So it's, they planted 15 acres of grapes, and they were kind of this thing that nobody really knew what we were going to do with them. Nobody had time to deal with them. I had another job. I worked for the sheriff's office for a long time before that, and I was still working there at the time. So we planted all these things, and it was like, well, what do we do? Right. So I got us contracts with Sylvan Ridge Winery in Eugene. We've grown for King Estate and Willamette Valley and Precept Wines. We grow a lot for right now. Mm-hmm. And so most of our fruit actually leaves the farm.
Gotcha.
So probably 80-85% goes out.
Yeah.
We only make 10%, mm-hmm. Maybe 15. And so it kind of grew out of there.
Yeah. I think I saw that there was one moment where, I don't know who it was in the family, but you guys were out at breakfast or something and like, why don't we give this wine thing a shot? Like, how hard can it be, right?
Yeah, it was a dumb decision.
Famous last words. Yeah.
We literally.
Yeah, we don't talk to that relative anymore.
Yeah, really. It was me.
Was it you?
Yeah, we. So we.
That's why they make you talk to me.
Yeah,
you have to do all the media interviews because this is your fault.
So we'd literally gone through and we're getting ready to sell all this stuff and we're looking around and it's like there's hundreds of wineries in Oregon. It can't be like hard to make this stuff, right? People are doing it. And so
Oh my god. Yeah. You just look back on that and like wish you could like
you reach those points in life where like this goes this way,
right.
Could go this way, and all of a sudden you're like, how the hell did
right.
But literally I was like, let's give it a shot. So we drove from breakfast down in Silverton across Wheatland Ferry over there in Kaiser, up to McMinnville, and there's a wine supply shop. So we go walk around in there and we talk to the guy. Nicest guys I've ever met. And also you go in there and so wine supply shop, Napa Auto Parts,
well,
right? Owned by the same person.
That nice because they did not try to talk you out of it.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, hey, we see this guy. We can sell him lots of stuff.
I don't know how nice they are. But,
but cool place. Literally, wine supply shop, Napa Auto Parts. You buy your wine supply stuff in a Napa Auto Parts bag.
That's awesome.
But,
that is so Oregon.
Yeah, exactly.
This smart
multitasking.
Oregon. Yeah.
And so
yeah,
they were.
Take a presser and 5 quarts of oil and.
Yeah.
A corkscrew pack.
Mm-hmm. You can do your tractor work and your winemaking at the same time. But it was awesome. They got us a lot of books, a lot of other stuff. We made 20 gallons of wine our first year, four or five gallon carboys. And it was horrendous, really bad wine.
Mm.
Everybody lied to me and said, it's really
good.
I love it. And then now, it's,
now they're honest. Yeah.
There's about 10 bottles of it left. And,
about
once a year we open one and it's not fantastic.
It doesn't get better. It's just getting
worse.
Doesn't
age. Now we do much better. Yeah, the wine's better.
Okay.
We literally started playing around with it. My wife's family grew up knowing the folks next door at St. Joe's, and they're phenomenal and have helped us get going with everything.
Mm-hmm.
I still help us every year.
Oh, cool. It's St. Joseph's Winery.
Yeah. I literally called Jason Hansen at Hansen Vineyards down in Monitor out of the blue.
Oh, okay.
Never met the guy before. The only connection we had to them was that his dad was the principal at 91 when my wife was there.
Oh my gosh.
And so literally called him up and was like, hey man, can I come talk to you about having a small winery? So he invited us down, showed us around, gave us a bunch of advice, told us who to contact.
Like, oh yeah, I
to
remember
do.
Little Jackie. She was
yeah, it was awesome. The community out here at wineries is phenomenal.
That's cool,
And so yeah, it's grown since then. We've gone from 20 gallons in our first year, and we processed just over 2,200 this year.
Wow. That's some growth for sure.
Yeah, full bottle right around probably 750 cases, which is pretty exciting.
That's so neat, that community of the wineries. Where do you think that comes from? I mean, like you think business, especially like even farming, when you mention like how many wineries mm-hmm. are there, there's I mean, it's probably growing demand, and but there's competition there, right? I mean, so where does this come from, the kind of yeah, sure, we'll help you?
Hey, you know, part of it's Oregon yeah. is a special place, and the community is amazing as a
yeah.
whole.
Yeah.
I think the wine industry, especially on this side of the valley, everybody's very small. You don't get these massive commercial wineries
gotcha.
That you go to, and you know, they're so busy working that they're not paying attention to you.
Yeah.
Everybody here wants wine to grow on this side of the valley, wants to work closely. And wine's one of those things where there's not really like a secret family recipe that you go through. you do this. I mean, vintages
are
different.
It's not proprietary.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and every vintage is different. And there's certain things you can do to wine to change it a little bit.
Yeah.
But you're not necessarily going to get the same result every time. I mean,
gotcha.
It's not like, you know, 2 + 2 = 4 when you do your additions. It's
yeah.
like, oh man, we'll adjust the acid and this will be our endpoint that we're going for. And you land somewhere that you didn't even think you might land.
So you're saying a lot of it's out of your control. It's the
mm-hmm.
sun, it's how much rain came that year, it's how hot or how cool it was, that kind of stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so everybody's really excited to work together. The more wineries you have in a cool space.
Commiserate together sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. We do that too. but like, I mean, leaving Camby, for example, you leave Camby, if there was one winery out here, you probably wouldn't be as apt to go wine tasting, but you go and now you can hit, you know, Pheasant Run in Aurora, and you can stop at
sure.
St. Joe's, and you can stop at us, and you can stop at Hanson, and everybody's within a 15-minute drive.
Sure. Yeah, when there's more of a scene, that's
exactly.
true. That's a good point, too. Yeah,
yeah.
The all rising tide kind of floats all boats,
yep.
that whole thing. So
more the merrier.
Yeah, cool. Well, one thing I wanted to ask you, because I have no idea, I don't know how many expert winemakers listen to this podcast, but I suspect it's not that many. can you tell us a little bit about what the process of winemaking is, because you literally learned it, so I mean, like, you kind of learned it on the go.
It's utter chaos. When we got going into it, I had this vision of stainless steel everywhere,
yeah.
and everyone's holding crystal glasses, dressed in fancy clothes, and squishing
like,
grapes.
Like yeah. white uniform,
yeah.
like lab coat conditions.
Uh-huh. It's not. It's really sticky and gross.
Yeah.
It depends on the wine you're making.
Yeah.
I mean, there's different things you do across the process, but as a general rule for like a red wine, for example.
Uh-huh.
So if we take in Pinot Noir and we're making a Pinot, we'll pick the grapes out of the field. The grapes get picked into giant plastic bins that hold roughly 900 to 1,000 pounds of fruit.
Okay.
Those come over to the winery by tractor.
Mm-hmm.
We lift those things up. We dump them into a crusher.
Okay.
And the crusher destemmer squishes the grape, removes the stem, shoots the stem out the side, and then you get your stem, your seed, your juice, your pulp, and your skins all going into a big fermenter. So from there, we'll go in and we will ferment on the skins for red wine,
mm-hmm.
10 to 12, 14 days, depending on how things are going. Sometimes a little quicker, sometimes a little slower. Then we press all that off. And so we take all of that, move it into a press, and then we get the wine off of that.
Yeah.
Settle for a few days, and then we'll barrel it.
Yeah.
Barrel anywhere from 12 to 24 months.
Guys, you literally use those big like oak barrels that are
yep.
like so picturesque and everything?
Yep.
Yeah.
59 gallons to 60 gallons depending on the cooperage, and they sit in there. Once they're in barrel, they go through a process, it's called malolactic fermentation,
uh-huh.
Which converts malic acid into lactic acid.
When do you add the whiskey?
Yeah, well, so that's part of the process.
Do people ever ask you about the name?
It's to the crew. The crew gets the whiskey.
Okay. that's why you guys are those big cases around. Okay.
It's what copes with the 16-hour days.
Right. Do people ever ask about that, like the name, like whiskey and
all
wine?
All the time.
Like, I bet, yeah.
Man, I've had everything from that is the dumbest name I've ever heard to people walking in and literally saying, we drove down from Portland, this is the only reason we came here was the cool name. I'm like, well, sweet, hopefully the wine doesn't
suck. There you go. I hope it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a cool name when we got going, everything. Obviously, the Postal 8 side was there, and that was the wedding and event venue, so
yeah.
there was going to be a label for that one. And the Whiskey Hill was the area. And so it's one of those things where, you know, father-in-law would go places and he would say, "We're from Whiskey Hill, Oregon," and people would be like, "Where the hell's Whiskey Hill?" it's a neat name. It's unique. It's a fun story. It keeps the history a little bit.
Yeah.
It does throw people for a loop.
Yeah.
No whiskey currently. One of my projects I'm working on is red wine aged in old whiskey barrels.
Okay.
So we have a distillery I'm hoping to work with here shortly to acquire some old whiskey barrels and probably do some very short aging up so we don't pick up too much flavor. But
yeah, I've tried some whiskey aged wine or bourbon aged, you know, wine, and I'm quite a fan myself. So I'm kind of excited about that. That'd be cool.
Yeah, if it's done right, it can be really good.
Yeah.
If it's not done right.
Right. Do you know where the name comes from for the area?
You know, I have asked around a lot, and no one has given me a specific story or a specific reference.
I couldn't find one. One thing I did though in my Googling, my research, like there are a million things called Whiskey Hill. Like you guys are not the only ones that are like, that's a cool name. I mean, there's Whiskey Hill Kennels.
Hill Store.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So Whiskey Hill Road runs between basically Bernard's Barlow intersection all the way into Hubbard right there. And so where 91 School
91
is,
school
there's
is.
The store right there. Prior to 91 School being built, there was a school there named Whiskey Hill School.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if that was the building where the store is now or if it was a different building. I've heard two different versions.
That's a tiny building.
Yeah, probably. Literally one-room schoolhouse.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was that building. It may have been one next to it.
Right.
But when they rebuilt it, apparently, you know, Whiskey Hill, not appropriate children kind of thing. we don't want to associate this with
Right. Yeah.
So 91 school was what came out of that. And I wish I had a better answer. Kind of ironic, I mean, really, because they're not really a hill.
Yeah, right.
There's no whiskey still, so.
I know you've kind of joked about, like, you know, worst decision we ever made to go to winery. Long days, a lot more work than maybe you expected, but has there been things that you kind of gained from it that have redeemed a little bit, you know, that you do enjoy from this journey that life's taking you on?
No, man, this is the best decision we ever made. I've had more fun doing it than I ever thought I would. I left the sheriff's office 3 years ago, this month, 3 years ago, and I can build my schedule, so I get to work around that. We have four kids, so I get to have them out working with me in the grapes.
Yeah.
They go and work with me in the winery.
They wouldn't let the kids come with you to sheriff's office work.
No, they frowned on it. Yeah,
Okay.
bad things.
Weird.
Yeah, shocking.
Weird. So they don't let whiskey be in schools. They don't let kids. I got a lot to learn about parenting.
You just gotta make it up as you know, everybody does.
right. Cool.
It's awesome. I love it. I can flex my schedule. My degree in college has nothing to do with winemaking. It's actually called exercise science, which is related to sports and coaching and kinesiology and biomechanics and all that. And so never really got to use that working in law enforcement. And now I get to help coach basketball at the high school in town.
Cool.
Actually get to use some of that, which is incredible.
Yeah, and I imagine your interactions with people are maybe a little more positive and more rewarding in this line of work, you know?
Literally, go through and, you know, working there.
You meet people at their lowest, yeah.
Yeah, every time you talk to somebody, they're having a bad day.
Right.
And it's not necessarily because of what's going on for them. It might not be, you know, their day so far might not have been the worst, but just your presence there most of the time was not a happy thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's times where you do community outreach stuff
for
and
sure.
You get to go talk to kids and do the fun stuff and the community events.
Or help victims.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
I'm sure that's
so there were good parts, but for the most part, even with victims, I mean, you're talking to them because something went wrong
for
them. And so just have not really a total negative connotation all the time, but that end.
I get you. Usually the flashing lights doesn't mean things are about to improve, right?
Makes people's heart. I mean, I see it just driving down the road and there's somebody going to a call. It doesn't matter if it's a fire truck or what, but you see them in your rearview mirror and you're like, oh, and you feel that like sink in your heart. And you're like, I'm in trouble. No. But now wine's a really positive thing and everybody likes talking about it. You know, we've had friends and family and people who've come in who don't like wine, and you can have a conversation around it, and it's something people like to talk about. It brings people together. It's something that on the holidays people like to talk about, and it's a blast.
Cool.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. Don't you hate it when you're just getting caught up on your favorite show and then your video streaming service drops it without warning? Wouldn't it be cool if you could record unlimited programs at once and watch them whenever and wherever you want? Meet Easy Video from DirectLink, the only app-based TV service in Canby that includes most of the major live local broadcast channels, sports, and national networks. Easy Video is, well, easy. It's compatible with your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smartphone, and laptop, so you have more options for how and where you watch TV. And the best part of all, Easy Video members save an average of $360 a year over traditional cable. Say goodbye to HD fees, DVR fees, equipment rentals, and costly installation. Go to directlink.coop/EZV or visit them at the corner of Southeast 2nd and Juniper Street in Canby to learn more about the future of TV.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
Open bottles have no problem getting drank around.
So, Ed, you got some stuff we can taste here?
Most definitely.
Okay.
So, we do a few different things. So obviously when we first started, the original grapes that got planted in order for the weddings were Pinot, so 15 acres of Pinot. So sure. That's the stuff that we sell.
The classic Oregon wine.
Yes, yeah. Most of that is the stuff that leaves the farm. We do make Pinot. We make a lot of Pinot because it's the wine we value and you have.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a fun one. We do more of a traditional French Burgundian style Pinot. Very light, very low oak, very low alcohol.
Okay.
And big fruity taste. So it pairs fantastically with toothpaste or gum if it's the first wine of the day. No, I'm just kidding.
that's a weird pairing.
Anytime it's the first wine, you always get a little bit. But
yeah.
Very light, very fruity, really
big glasses.
Easy drinking. Yeah. Yeah.
I have deep insight into wine, so comment on the glass and
this is what happens when you drink rosé and order wine glasses.
Okay.
they used to be called the Oregon Pinot glass. Now they're called, I can't remember what
these
they
are. These are like the ones that famously hold a whole bottle or something.
Yes.
Like that.
Yeah. They're made by a German company. They're crystal and you drink rosé and you order something.
You spend too much. And you only fill these up 3/4 full. So I feel gypped. So. All right. Well, cheers.
Cheers. Dijon 115 Pinot, very light, very fruity, very light color. We don't add anything to increase the color.
Yeah. It is super light. Like Pinot, I don't drink a lot of red wines, but it always does feel like a lot more savory and more of a heavier kind of wine. And the color as well, like you said, this is a lot sort of clearer and lighter color than you sort of think when you think of just like that deep blood red of the Pinot. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So. Pinot's a fun one. Literally the lightest bodied red out there. There's nothing lighter.
Yeah, I think so. I like it.
Great food wine. You know, you go through and so wine tasting, right? So if anybody wants to go wine tasting, you can go read all kinds of voodoo about wine tasting. But what it comes down to is the fun part about wine tasting is wine is really subjective. So everybody who tries it is going to have a different opinion. What I go try is going to be different than what a wine critic or a judge tries is going to be different from anybody who goes wine tasting. So the fun thing is you go and try four or five wines at a place, right. Find one you like. You might not like any of them. You might like all five. You never know. Right. But the two people that go with you might hate the one that you like, and you might like it.
Right. And pro tip, like, master the art of, like, saying things, words that don't say anything, you know? Like, this wine has a lot of personality.
Exactly. You just make stuff up as you go. Nobody
exactly.
knows.
And you can't be wrong. Like, as long as you're saying something, they're not going to say, like, no, that's not right.
Like, no. And it's super friendly, super easy going. Yeah. A lot of these people will tell you the story of the wine, a lot about the year, a lot about the vintage, a lot about their experience making it.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of that with it.
Well, that is, in all honesty, that is super smooth, and the fruity notes are pretty strong in that. I like it.
Yeah, it's one of our flagship ones. That's one of our big ones. This one is a red blend. So it's a new red blend for us. We just released it in September.
That one's got that kind of darker color to it.
Yes, much. So this has four different grapes in it. It is 29% Leon Mio, which is a French hybrid, 29% Maréchal Foch, which is also a French hybrid, 34% Pinot Noir, and 7% Syrah.
Okay.
And then half American oak, half French oak. Crazy popular for us so far. We've gone through well over half of it, and it's only been out since September. It's probably not going to make it through the summer.
Yeah. I like the label. It's got this red tractor. Like, you kind of definitely calling back that farming tradition that you guys have. And yeah.
It's got a funny story. So we went through, at first we were going to call it Rundown Red because it's named, the label was always going to be this red tractor that my father-in-law's had for forever. And so Rundown Red is not a popular name, and so my sister-in-law was like, you should name it Reliable Red, that's more positive and upbeat. So that one won. And then so he had actually bought the tractor in 1979. Mm-hmm. 3 years prior, the tractor was rolled up in the Teton dam burst and destroyed. So they sent it to Oregon as pieces in a basket, rebuilt it. He bought it in 79. It's been running fantastically since then. It's done most of the farm work out here. The Reliable Red.
That is a cool story. So it helped produce us the wine that bears its name.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been a fun wine for us.
Cool.
But yeah, it's a. Oh, that was the other thing. With wine tasting, you go through, and best advice I ever heard. So you go through, and a lot of people will say you have to, you know, evaluate color. You have to evaluate the clarity. You have to evaluate legs.
The thing I think is so weird: the legs, like the. How much it stays on the glass edges or something, like, it's like, who cares?
Voodoo, man.
Yeah.
I've looked around at that, and you go, and people will be like, the legs are very important. So what comes down the side of the glass could either relate to alcohol content, or sugar content. It really has to do
with to somebody who cares.
Mainly the viscosity of the wine.
Yeah.
Biggest thing I've seen, it means nothing. It has to do with how clean the glass is.
Okay.
If you can hear
in the background, that was some like wine connoisseur screaming when you said that. So they're like, no, it means something. This one is very good. It doesn't have that fruitiness. It's got some more acidity to it, but still has a lot of character and a good wine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's this one's one of my favorite ones we do right now.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Nice and smooth. You don't have to pair it with food. You can just drink it. It's a nice everyday drinkable wine.
Yeah, I think that is a good way to describe it. Kind of that classic taste when you, because there's so many things like you've said that you can do with red wine. But if you just imagine a red wine, this is kind of what you're thinking of. Just kind of a strong red wine. So, and some of those wines in the blend are words I heard from Darren Ingram over at King's Raven for the first time. The Maréchal Foch, and you know, things that I'd never heard before. So.
Yep, Darren does a phenomenal job. He was one of the first ones to start doing those over here, and it's been awesome that he's brought those to an area. And everybody's able to offer something that's not just, you know.
Yeah, it's cool to get different flavors, and each one of these varietals has like their own history and their own thing. It's just cool to bring it here. Why do you do blends, like to just kind of vary the taste? Are there things that certain grapes have in strength and weakness, and you try to balance that? Or
So you just take everything that's left when you're done, you just dump it all in. Oh, and make gotcha.
It sort of very pragmatic.
Yeah. No, it's
you call it a blend.
I mean, somebody might do that. That's honestly not how we do it. We go through and different grapes offer different things. Mm-hmm. So you'll see in a second. I mean, not this Pinot individually, but Pinot Noir is one major component of this blend.
Yeah.
The next one you'll try, Maréchal Foch, is another major component of this blend. And each one of them has something different to offer. Pinot, a little higher acidity, a little more tannin. Maréchal Foch, very low acid, very low tannin, mm-hmm. very big fruit. And so they balance each other well. And so gotcha. You kind of just play that balancing act. And go through and find what you like. And so yeah. blending is one of those things that if you go through and you find a red blend that you like, it's generally going to be to that winemaker's taste. So yeah. What I blend that I like may be different from what, you know, another winemaker blends. And so you're kind of going down the road, mm-hmm. if you like that blend, you follow that blend over time,
cool.
It'll be somewhat similar.
Yeah. So this is the Maréchal Foch we're doing now?
Yes, so this is a French hybrid. It's very cold hardy, cool climate, bigger red, low tannin, low acid, big fruit. This one kind of has like a following to it of people who really, really like it and will drive a long ways to try it.
Do you find with the blends that it equalizes some of that kind of difficulties you have year to year with, you know, like all things not being equal year to year, the sun, the rain, and things that can affect the vintages? Do you find that doing the blends can kind of balance that out a little bit, so you might have a little more equality year to year, or no?
It kind of. So like, we go through and like when we did this blend, I was going to put into the blend what I thought made the best wine, and then we were going to bottle everything else as a standalone after that.
Yeah.
So we went through and made the blend, and then we ended up bottling 18 cases of Foch because that's what was left over of the Foch. I didn't want to put the rest of it in there because
right.
I didn't feel it made the blend better.
Right.
The vintage, so like if you go wine tasting and you go and you try five Pinots all lined up from the same place, one of the things I find cool about wine and exciting is that you should try five different wines. You shouldn't go through, and it shouldn't be five Pinots that are identical going down the road, because sure. every year is different. You know, 2017, for example, lots of rain at the end, cloudy skies, hard time ripening everything.
Yeah.
Low sugars, high acid, light body wine. 2018, perfect end of the year. Everything was gorgeous, big yields, sun, well-developed sugars, perfect acids. I mean, we could literally pick at our leisure. We could run back-to-back ferments. And so, you know, I expect that when we go and taste those two side-by-side, that you get two different wines. It should be representative of the year. They should have a story to them. And you can go through and you can adjust. You can darken a wine. You can sure. drop acid. You can do all kinds of things to make them as identical as you can. But the story of the vintage is one of the fun parts.
Yeah. You lose something when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Maréchal Foch, all the way from France.
Oh, yeah. Wine tasting, yeah. Well, this one's all the way. We bought the grapes from Hansen Vineyards because our Foch that's planted is not producing yet. Mm-hmm. It's a unique grape.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely a different taste than you get with the blend. You hit it with, it has a very big taste. Like as soon as it touches your lips, like, you know, you're already feeling the taste, which is not, sometimes you gotta kind of chew on it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like this one is like ready to go as soon as you taste it. So, it's interesting. It is a unique taste. I feel like this one would be good with food.
Oh yeah,
it's some kind of meat.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Big, nice steak or a roast or something. Something real hearty.
It is interesting though to try something that's not just your Pinot and whatnot. So.
Oh yeah, because you can go through and you can. So that's one of the other fun things. So you get this perception in the Willamette Valley that people go out and they go wine tasting, and you're gonna try Pinot all day, and that may be true some places. I mean,
if you want.
Yeah,
I mean, you definitely can do that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of places in Newburgh, Dundee area, very fancy wineries, very big.
But I used to work at the Newburgh Graphic. I drank, you know, saw nothing but Pinot Noir.
Oh, yeah.
So, like,
yeah,
nose to me. Like, that is, yeah.
I mean, that's literally that five-flight Pinot tasting, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's long.
Yeah.
But one of the coolest things about this side, I mean, like, talking about King's Raven, I mean, a lot of hybrids. They do Chardonnay, they do Foch, they do Leon Mio, they do everything. Hanson Vineyards down the road, same thing. All kinds of different varietals and blends and stuff that's not Pinot. St. Joe's has a ton of different varieties. They do Merlot, they do Cab, they do Pinot. Pheasant Run and Aurora brings grapes from all over the West Coast. Makes all kinds of big stuff. So, I mean, all this stuff is right in the backyard here that is a blast to taste.
Yeah, no. Cool. Well, that's a good one.
So this one is a good one to finish on.
Okay.
It's a Syrah, but it's a different Syrah. So it's a cool climate Syrah. So these grapes were grown at St. Joseph's next door.
Okay.
We are very, very lucky that they are willing to sell us a ton of this year. Mm-hmm. So we don't make a lot. We only make 50 cases, but it is very, very popular for us.
Okay.
Syrah, as a background, most naturally tannic grape on the planet.
Yeah.
Big bodied, I mean, you drink it and it sucks the moisture out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And it's this huge, huge thing. So this one is a cool climate Syrah. And so you get something much lighter, much more acid driven, and you get a lot more of the blackberry and boysenberry characteristics.
Yeah.
And it really mellows it out.
It's really rich in color. Like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that is really dry.
Yeah, totally, totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun one to work with. It's nice to add, again, something in there that's not
beef. You know, I will say, like, the smell and the sense of it is drier than the actual taste of it, I think. Like, it almost had sort of like a rubbing alcohol smell to it when it was coming in my mouth, but then the taste was pretty smooth, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, nice and easy drinking. We go through quite a bit of this when we taste it.
Yeah.
It's a really popular one.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, all of these are really good wines. It's cool too. This is kind of a find out here, you know, in the Whiskey Hill area, this kind of more blue collar area, even blue collar name, Whiskey mm-hmm. Hill, to find that, you know, there are words like Maréchal Foch that are spoken here is kind of an interesting find, and it's cool to... cool to taste some of this stuff. Thank you so much, and see that you guys know what you're doing a little bit, even though you just started a few years ago.
Yeah, it's a blast, man. If people are interested in wine tasting in this area, a bunch of different ways to do it.
Yeah. When is your tasting room open?
You can either drive out to us. We're open soon to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this time of year. February, we're only Saturday and Sunday, but March through November, we're Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. People can find us online at www.whiskeyhillwinery.com. Another fun way to go out and see all the wineries in the area is the Cascade Foothills Group does a passport every spring. So it usually runs May and June. And I believe it's $39 and it gets you wine tasting at two wine tastings at all 15 wineries in the Cascade Foothills, which most of them are in the Canby area up here.
Right.
And then discounts on wine at everywhere you go. So it's a great way to go out and see all 15 to discover wine in the area. And then you go through, you get a stamp everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. And then when you finish it at the end, you submit the passport to the last place you visit and you get entered for a chance to win a case of wine and a night at the Oregon Gardens.
Cool.
So it's a blast. It's a great way to do it. And that's available at CascadeFoothillsWines.com.
Cool. Well, that sounds really fun. We'll have to do that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Chris. It was really nice to meet you. Thanks for being on the program. Let me know when you do start doing the whiskey barrel wine. If you need help draining those barrels, I'll be able to help.
Yeah, most definitely.
This weekend in Canby, DirectLink is hosting its monthly community classes featuring Tyler and me. It's a class about podcasts, what they are, their history, how to listen to them. I mean, if you're listening to this now, you're probably in pretty good shape as far as that goes, but come out anyway if you can. It's free and fun and educational. The classes will be at 10 a.m., 3 p.m., and 6:30 p.m. today, Thursday, and the community classroom is located next door to DirectLink's main offices on Southeast 2nd Avenue. If you can't make it, or if you just can't get enough of us, we'll also be back at Cuts Forest Market this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We'll be sharing information about the podcast and how to listen, playing games, and doing some on-site recording as we promote the new Cambie Now podcast-inspired drink at the Cuts Forest Cafe, which is available throughout the month of March. Stop by and say hi. We'd love to meet you. You may even make it on the show. Also on Saturday, Cambie Historical Society will hold its spring flea market at the Clackamas County Event Center from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event is a Cambie Historical Society fundraiser and one of their main sources of funding each year. Check it out for vendors selling antiques, collectibles, and new and used items of interest. On Sunday, why do cheese and wine pair so well together? Is there a more scientific reason than who cares, give me more cheese? Danya Burmeister, a professional wine educator, will be at TMK Creamery from noon to 5 p.m. to pair craft wine with their craft cheeses and discuss the science and art of wine and cheese pairing. Tickets available for pre-purchase or at the door. Don't miss recurring events at the library. Storytime for ages 3 to 6 will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, while Storytime in Spanish will be 11 on Saturday. Intercambio is also at 11 on Saturday. Come test your English or Spanish skills with native speakers. On Sunday from 1:30 to 2:30, read to Digby the dog. Digby has been specially trained to be an extra good listener and won't judge anyone's reading mistakes except for Tyler. Sign up for a 15-minute time slot or just drop in during the program. For the latest events or to submit your own, visit cambienowpod.com/calendar. Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest, and the FOB Taproom in Cambie is one of the best places to enjoy all your old favorites and your new favorites. They have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beers, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world. Hey Tyler, do you know what FOB stands for? That's right. It's Friends of Beer, and that's what they are.
Oh, well, the FOB Taproom also hosts an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on, so come on by. Find them at the Cambie Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB.
I am not a golfer. I mean, I'm not a good golfer. So when I want to play a few rounds, I head over to Frontier Golf Course. They're a family-owned, family-friendly 9-hole course with beautiful scenery. And they let me rent clubs or bring my own. And they don't judge me for my slices and hacks. Or, you know, my language.
Frontier Golf Course is a great place to meet your buddies and have a drink or bring your kids along. They're located on Holly Street just north of town. If you hit the ferry, you've gone too far.
Also, please don't hit the ferry.
Yeah, please don't. But do ask them about Farley the Goat. They love that. Frontier prides itself on being the best value course you'll find in the area. If you haven't been by in a while, you've got to come check out what the new owners have done. Frontier Golf Course, it's a new frontier.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Chris Helbling, and to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses that support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
We'll have a very special guest for you on our next episode. It's Alex Gino, author of the children's books George and You Don't Know Everything, Jelly P. They'll give us a sneak peek of the event they're hosting at the Backstop Bar and Grill next week, and they'll also answer questions we've heard from the community about their acclaimed but also controversial work.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cambie Now, or on our website, cambienowpod.com.